Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
L-E-T-E-N-E-T. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
L-E-T-E-N-E-T.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for joining us. We go now to the courtroom for segment number one of today's coverage in the trial of Scott Peterson, the Parkland School Resource Police Officer, charged with negligence in failing to protect the children of Parkland as a gunman went through the school executing many, many students. Let's go to the courtroom.
Okay, I'm going to go back on the record. This is State versus Scott Peterson, 19-7166 CF-10A. I have Ms. Gomes, Mr. Kilburn, Mr. Klinger present for the state. I have Mr. Igarsh present for Mr. Peterson, who likewise is present. We are outside the presence of the jury. I apologize for the delay in getting started this morning. A few things ran long in my normal division docket than I had anticipated. That's completely my fault. State, you ready to proceed with your presentation?
Yes, we are, Your Honor.
State, anything you need me to address before we get going?
Yeah, Your Honor.
Defense, anything you need me to address before we get going?
No, thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, please bring the jury in.
Jurors entering.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Come on in. Welcome back. Come on in. Once you're back in those same seats, you may be seated. All the parties may be seated. Sir, if I could have you come all the way up here to the witness stand once you reach it, but before you have a seat, if you can just stop and look at me, please.
Sir.
Raise your right hand. You swear to tell the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth.
I do.
Please be seated. And sir, once you are seated, if I could just scoot that chair all the way up as far as it will go, can you please state your full name and spell your full name?
Samuel Samaru. First name is S-A-M-U-E-L. Last name is S-A-M-A-R-O-O.
Mr. Kilburn, you may inquire.
Thank you, Your Honor. Can you please introduce yourself to the jury?
Good morning, jury. I'm Samuel Samaru. I'm a lieutenant colonel for Broward County Sheriff's Office.
What does a lieutenant colonel mean? What is their responsibilities?
I'm the deputy chief, second in command of patrol. So basically, every patrol contract city in Broward County, I'm second in command that controls the contract cities, the courthouse, the Port Everglades, airport, and such.
How long have you been a lieutenant colonel?
Approximately 3 months now, sir.
How long have you been with BSO in total?
I'm actually going to my 30th year in the Broward Sheriff's Office.
Did you say 30th? I'm sorry.
30th, okay. Yes.
So let's start back at the beginning. Let's go back 30 years ago when you were first hired by the Broward Sheriff's Office. What in what capacity were you hired?
I was hired as a detention deputy.
And what is a detention deputy?
I worked in a jail from 1992 to 1998, July of 1998.
And what, is there a rank affiliated with that job, or how does it work?
Deputy is the first step. Before that, I actually go on, you go sergeant, lieutenant, captain, major, lieutenant colonel, and colonel.
Okay. So going back to 30 years ago when you were a detention deputy, did you have training to become a detention deputy?
Yes, I did.
Approximately how many hours of training or how many days of training did you have?
Back then, it was probably like 12 weeks.
Okay. And what did that training encompass?
Basically laws, procedures, pretty much self-defense, firearms.
And did you have to go to like a detention deputy academy?
Yes, I did. Broward College.
Broward College. Okay. So after those 12 weeks, presumably you graduated.
Yes.
And you started working in the jails?
Yes, on the job, like OJT. We had no training officers per se back in those days, back in the 90s, early 90s. It's more structured now.
So you did not in the 90s have a direct supervisor who told you what to do the first, let's say, 6 weeks or 8 weeks you were in the jail?
It was, but not formal, not formalized, should I say.
It was informal?
Correct.
Okay. You worked at the jail for how long?
Approximately 5 years.
During those 5 years, how often would you need to take refresher courses or training courses?
Annually. You go to annual in-service every year to stay current with current times with best practices.
Can you describe what in-service means?
In-service is a mandate. The Broward Sheriff's is very proactive. It's like continuing education. Every year there's something new, technology or case laws or operational or tactics, in order to make your personnel be competent and equivalent to perform at their best. Every single year you get more training.
How long was the in-service training?
It depends. Sometimes it's 3 consecutive days or 24 hours within an annual period.
Okay. Back then when you were a detention deputy, was there any additional training besides the in-service training?
There were specialty classes, standalone, which means that you put in for it based upon seniority. You may be offered a standalone class. And standalone means basically it's an 8-hour, 16-hour block of instruction for a specific skill set, maybe firearms or defensive tactics or case law, something of that nature.
Did you partake in those back when you were a detention deputy?
I took part in several of them.
You did?
Yes.
Okay. At any point during your tenure as a detention deputy, did you ever teach any of the training classes?
Yes. The latter part of my tenure in the jail, from 1997 to 1998, I was assigned to the Correction Academy at the Police Academy. So I was a class advisor. So my job was basically to, almost like a drill instructor, but a little more than that, should I say, basically on the academic side, talk about like interpersonal skills, jail operations, procedures.
So for 97 to 98, were you stationed at the Academy or were you stationed still in the jail cell?
I was stationed in the Academy.
And where is the Academy?
It's in Davie, Florida.
Is it at Broward College?
It's at Broward College.
After that, after 97-ish, where did you go next in your career at BSO?
July of 1998, I was assigned to the city of Tamarack as a patrol deputy.
Now, did you have to go back to the actual police academy for that, or how does it work when you become a detention deputy to a law enforcement, Department of Law Enforcement deputy?
There's two options. Option one is to reapply and you go to a full police academy. Option two, which I took, was a cross-certification. You applied to go to the academy, but as you applied, you basically go to school at night. So while I was a class advisor at Broward College, I attended night school to fulfill the requirements of becoming a law enforcement officer, which is additional legal classes, driving, shooting, and a few other like patrol procedures.
How long was those cross-designation, option two, how long did that take you to fulfill?
4 hours per night for probably approximately 4 months.
Okay. Every night, 5 nights a week?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so 20 hours a week for how many weeks?
Like 4 months.
Okay. Upon graduating from that, where were you assigned?
The city of Tamarack.
And in what capacity?
Road patrol.
And how, well, can you just explain what road patrol?
Basically call for service. We all live in cities or in Broward County. So my main function was to report for service, any call for service, from traffic accidents to a shooting to a robbery or burglary or petty theft. That's what my main responsibilities were.
And how long were you a road patrol deputy in Tamarack?
I was a road patrol deputy for approximately 3 years.
And then after those 3 years, during those 3 years, did you take training?
Yes, I did.
Was that in-service training, the mandatory training?
Yes, mandatory in-service.
Did you take standalone classes as well?
Yes.
Okay. At that point, did you teach any classes?
No, sir.
Okay. After the road patrol in Tamarack, where did you go next?
I went to from September of 2001 to August of 2006.
What is the civil division?
Civil division is an offset of the Broward Sheriff's Office, such as the evictions, the domestic violence orders, writ of bodily attachment, which is basically a child support pickup order, levies and replevins, which are court orders to seize property or ask for money based on outstanding debt.
During those, that was five years you did that?
Yes, sir.
Did you receive training in regards to that?
Yes, sir.
So that's like a specialty, the civil division, is it?
Correct, yes.
Do you receive specialized training for that specialized unit?
At that particular time, yes, we did.
Okay, and what did that training encompass?
We had quarterly training. So one quarter may basically be firearms. The second quarter might be building tactics, which is going to a building, searching it properly. Another quarter may be self-defense, like defensive tactics, we call it, but it's basically self-defense. And the fourth quarter might be something, a scenario base. That type could be driving, could be anything else, what they chose.
Okay, and are these trainings that you took every single year while you were in the civil division?
Correct.
Okay. Did you also do standalone trainings?
Yes.
Okay, approximately how many did you do standalone? You can ballpark it for me.
Maybe two or three a year based upon availability, and my assignment was very taxing, so I didn't have the opportunity to take any other classes.
And by taxing, did it take a lot of your time?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you just said the standalone are based upon availability. Can you just explain to the jury what you mean by that?
There are approximately 1,600 sworn deputies for Broward County Sheriff's Office, and the average class is built for 30 participants, and we all work various shifts and assignments. You put in for it, and based upon the shift and availability, you get selected.
Okay. So it's not okay. After the civil department, so process, whatever, where did you go next?
I left the agency for like 9 months. Okay. I was undercover in Albany, Georgia, working with the feds. I came back to Broward.
Was this a task force that you were on?
Yes.
Okay. So were you kind of loaned out by BSO to the
feds? No, I actually left BSO.
Okay.
I didn't want to be a cop anymore for some reason. It was kind of crazy. And I went to Albany, Georgia, and I got hired as a police officer. And immediately, I was undercover. I was undercover in the academy. I was a college student undercover, working gangs, narcotics. And then the feds adopted a few cases, and I worked with them.
So you actually went to an academy again up in Albany, Georgia?
Yes, Tifton, Georgia.
Tifton, Georgia. How many hours was that?
It was 10 weeks.
10 weeks. After that? After Albany, Georgia?
I came back to Broward Sheriff's Office in October of 2007.
And in what department?
I'm a deputy sheriff. I worked in unincorporated Broward, which is Central Broward. Basically, the PSB is Broward and 27th Avenue. And I was a patrol deputy there.
So road patrol, what you started out with before?
Correct.
Okay. How long did you do that for?
I was road patrol for probably 2 years because I was also a field training officer.
Let's slow down there. During those 2 years, did you receive additional training?
Yes.
Okay. Was this the standard in-service mandated training?
Yes. In-service mandated for everyone. It's ongoing. It's consistent.
So in-service training, every single law enforcement deputy?
Yes.
No matter if they're a lieutenant colonel or if they're a rookie road patrol, they must take the same classes?
Correct.
Okay. Now, during that time frame, those 2 years, did you take any standalone classes?
Yes, I did.
Ballpark it for me. How many classes would you say?
3 to 4 classes per year, based on the manpower. I worked in Central Broward, which is very fast-paced, one of the most violent areas to work, okay. And scheduling.
Now, you also said you were an FTO.
Field training officer. I was a field training officer. Based upon my experience in the academy and years of service, I was chosen or selected to train other new incoming deputies on procedures and how to handle calls to service.
What's the difference between the training at the academy and the training offered by field training officers?
The academy, to layman's terms, is basically building the house frame, the foundation and the exterior of the house. A field trained officer is the fine finishes, the furniture, the intricate parts of law enforcement, from investigative and putting things which you've learned in theory into practical use.
can you explain to the jury, a deputy graduates from the academy, they are hired by Broward Sheriff's Office, they start working on the road. Is that when they're assigned a field training officer?
Yes.
So it's the freshest of the fresh, the rookies. So
correct.
And how long, for an individual deputy, that you were their field training officer, how long did that last, that you were a particular deputy's field training officer?
At that particular time, it was 12 weeks. We were assigned a trained deputy, 4 weeks. They stayed with three phases. Each phase is 4 weeks. I'll take a deputy for 4 weeks and work on them on different procedures and policies in the Broward Sheriff's Office.
Now, are the phases broken up that you're supposed to highlight certain things that are necessary to be a law enforcement officer, or is it just to get different perspectives from three different field training officers over the course of 12 weeks?
It's mapped out. Like, phase one is basically observation. Phase two, they get more interactive. And phase three, the deputy is supposed to be on their own. But working in Central Broward, it comes at you pretty fast. So your first day, you could be involved in a shooting, a foot chase, a robbery, a rape. It's not that structured in that particular area.
And if a rookie is on their first day, they're faced with a burglary, is it the field training officer that will help them, guide them through what to do, kind of like learn with their feet to the fire, so to speak?
Right. They'll attach to the hip. You follow me, whatever I do, you do.
Field training officer, were you field training officer the full 2 years that you were there?
Yes.
Okay. So 12 weeks program, I'm not going to do the math, but you had quite a few new rookies that you were training.
Correct.
Okay. Did you take training classes to become a training officer?
Yes.
Okay. How long, how does that work?
I believe it was, I don't know if it's 40 or 80 hours. I know the curriculum has changed based upon criminal justice standards and training commission, but it could have been 40, it could have been 80.
So either 1 week or 2 weeks of training that you received to become a field training officer.
Correct.
After your 2 years in Tamarack, where did you go next?
No, those 2 years, I was in Central Broward.
I'm sorry, Central Broward, I apologize.
I went to, we call it the SET team, Selective Enforcement Team. So basically, I dealt with street-level crimes, narcotics, prostitution, robbery suspect, burglary suspects. And I did that for approximately almost 3 more years.
Were you a detective in the SET team?
Yes, sir.
What's the difference between a detective and a road patrol deputy?
A detective has more specialized training, and also their job function or purview responsibilities is different. They are there to solve crime or address certain issues, whether the district chief or the district captain.
So is it accurate to say road patrol kind of responds to 911, driving around the street if they see something, whereas the detectives have more of an investigative role?
Correct.
To become a detective in the SET team, the Selective Enforcement Team, did you have to have additional training for that?
You do. You take basically class like narcotics identification, some investigative classes, criminal investigation. And in my case, it was very unique because I came from Albany, Georgia. I was basically on-the-job training. I worked with feds. I was undercover, which is kind of an odd person to put in that unit. I already had the experience of dealing with different levels of crimes.
Well, with that said, you still had to take the training.
Yes.
Okay. And at that point in time, while you were on the SET team, were you teaching any classes?
No, sir.
Okay. After the SET team, where did you go to next?
I got promoted August of 2012.
To what rank?
Sergeant.
Sergeant in what unit?
Patrol for Central Broward.
And how long were you a sergeant for patrol in Central Broward?
I was a patrol sergeant from August 2012 to February of 2013.
Now, during that time frame, and it wasn't that long a time, did you have additional training as well?
They give you new sergeant orientation, basically how to be a supervisor. Line supervision, understanding how the dynamics of setting up your day, scheduling your people, understanding the dynamics of leadership, and addressing issues that come on as calls to service, responding to calls to service, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable.
After that spot, where did you go next?
I was transferred to the training division.
And this was when? Were you transferred to
February of 2013.
What rank were you February 2013 when you went to training?
Sergeant.
So you started off in training as a sergeant?
Correct.
How does a deputy become a sergeant? What's the process?
First of all, it's years of service. There's a cutoff. It might be 3 years or 5 years, but you study, you take some books, you study different books, and you basically take a leadership perspective. As a field trained officer, they made me the officer in charge. So I was responsible basically for handling calls. The sergeant, like, hey, you know what? If you plan to be a sergeant, let's see how you perform as a sergeant. And you study, you may take a class called line supervision, and pretty much that's it.
Is there an exam associated with that as well?
Yes, it is, 6 exam.
And you have to take the exam, you have to pass the exam to become a sergeant?
You take a written exam based upon policy, state statute, books on leadership. Once you've taken that class, that test, you're ranked the top 50 per se. After the top 50 is selected, you go to an assessment board, which in turn gives you, you sit with an assessor or a camera, and they give you scenarios, critical incidents, employee problems, and just different issues. How would you proceed in your thought process of handling that particular problem?
If you pass that portion of it, you become a sergeant.
You're placed on a list for eligibility, and then you're selected as a supervisor based upon the need of the agency.
Okay. Ultimately, you were placed on that list, and you became a
sergeant. That's correct.
Okay. Sergeant in training. What was your responsibilities as a sergeant in training?
My responsibilities was basically to coordinate training for 1,600 people at the Broward County Sheriff's Office and Department of Law Enforcement. Being agent aside, we had phases. Like phase one was from January to April. Phase two is right from March to August. And phase three is from probably September, December. And we pick a topic. It may be firearms for the first 4 months. Second topic may be driving. The third topic might be active killer or building tactics or self-defense, such as defensive tactics.
As a sergeant, you're coordinating this. Are you also coming up with the, let's call them lesson plans for training as well?
As a sergeant, your responsibility is to look over the lesson plans, add content, review of it, and most importantly, make sure it's best practices or vetted. You just can't, for instance, as a sergeant, I look at reference materials. If we're going to build a lesson plan, it has to have content to it. If one of my deputy trainers was to develop a lesson plan and put as a reference source Wikipedia, that's automatic, I'll strike through it. Wikipedia is not a better site. You can't use that. I want something that's been accredited or met by standards, such as the Criminal Justice Standard Training Commission for the state of Florida or from another agency, something that's accredited that we could hold or hang our hat on to best practices.
Over, so from February to 2013 until what date were you the sergeant in training?
February of 2018. From February 2013 to February of 2018.
Okay. So in those 5 years, how many lesson plans would you say you reviewed?
Conservatively, let's do 6 to 8 per year times 5 years.
Okay. So somewhere between 35 to 40?
Correct.
Okay. Now, of those lesson plans reviewing, you have to vet whether or not it's a meaningful and purposeful training, correct?
Yes.
Were there situations during those 5 years where you had the people that gave input into the lesson plans change it?
Yes.
How often did that occur?
If you look at the top of the lesson plan, there's dates. You could put because it may be a case law practice that comes out in January of 2023, but by March, a case law has been changed or something updated.
It's your what's being taught is the most up-to-date information.
Correct.
Okay. And the lesson plans that you review, that you approve, you actually have to sign off on, correct?
Yes, I have to review it and place my initials on it over the date.
And why is that?
To verify that I actually looked at it.
Okay.
And the next level of the lieutenant that comes after me, they want to validate that I actually looked at this plan, went over this plan, made sure it was almost up to the final product, 95% completed or better.
Now, you basically just explained it, but can you explain the approval process of a particular plan? Does it start until upon completion where
a lesson plan starts with a topic? The deputy picks a topic, they follow a structure, plan together, I review it. During the review process, I may make changes, amendments, it gets approved, I sign off on the approval. The next step, it goes to the operational lieutenant, next rank up above me. He looks at it, review it, next rank above, and the final say, so the director, at that time it was Major Schultz.
So after you review it, Major Schultz had to review it.
He's a final approval.
Final approval, okay. After February of 2018, where did you go?
I was promoted to the rank of lieutenant, and I was assigned to the city of Pompano Beach as a ship commander.
What's a ship commander?
I was responsible, basically, for 26 deputies and 4 sergeants on midnights patrolling the city of Pompano, the east side and the west side.
I want to go back to one question I forgot to ask. February 2013 to February 2018, while you were in the sergeant in training, did you also have to take training classes?
Yes.
Okay. Can you just explain that?
I took a lot of classes. For instance, one of the most important classes I took was in force science, understanding the dynamics of shooting and officers' response to stimuli during different events. I also took a lot of classes on use of force. The majority of law enforcement encounters is use of force, and how can we handle situation, the best practices for handling situations or critical incidents for our city.
Can you just explain what use of force is?
Use of force, it's more like a matrix, what I say, or steps. We used to have steps. Different response, a subject or a suspect, they provide some type of resistance. A law enforcement officer has to respond to that resistance at a certain level, and it has to be reasonable, necessary and reasonable. For instance, if a person was shoplifting and a deputy went in there and the person stole something, ran outside, they're fleeing, you tackle them. You might have to tackle them. If the person gives resistance, like throwing a punch at the officer could respond with a punch or a taser or a baton or pepper spray. If the person is sat right here, they had no level of resistance, we just walk up there and put up handcuffs on. There's different levels, different response levels. And it's mandated by case law, Graham versus Connor. It's in Florida State statute. It's in the Broward County Sheriff's policy.
Use of force, is this something you also taught during
Yes.
your tenure?
Yes, I did.
For how long?
For all 5 years in the training division.
Okay. So you not only approved other lessons plans, but you actually trained officers yourself?
Yes.
Okay. What classes did you train in? Did you teach?
I basically taught the use of force classes, 64 classes. That's what it took to get the whole entire agency through use of force every single year.
64 individual classes?
Classes, okay. With 30 to 32 participants.
Did you take classes outside of Broward Sheriff's Office for your role as the sergeant in training?
Yes. Like I mentioned before, the force science class. There's all the supervisory classes I took. You take, for instance, also managing critical incidents.
And these are external from the academy over in Davie. These could be throughout the state or throughout the country.
It could be vendors, yes. You have subject matter experts from different agencies or maybe from the college. You just take the classes and you get, you know, the content, and you formulate it into a lesson plan to be taught at the Broward County Sheriff's Office.
Now, we're going back to Pompano in 2018, shift commander. How long were you there?
I was in Pompano for 1 year.
1 year. During that 1 year, did you continue to take classes?
Yes, I did.
Did you continue to teach classes?
No.
Okay. As a ship commander, how does that differ from field training officer in terms of hands-on teaching the rookies or the new people what to do?
It's not formalized training, it's more structured oversight. You're a mentor, a leader to the sergeants. There's deputy level, then there's sergeants. And your job is to facilitate resources and guidance in handling different situations from a supervisory perspective.
Okay. After that 1 year in Pompano, where'd you go?
I was promoted to the rank of captain in March of 2019, to training division.
So you were the captain in training in 2019.
Correct.
How long did you stay as the captain in training?
March 2019 to March 2021.
Okay, so for 2 years you were the captain. Could you explain to the jury what's the difference between, well, your new responsibilities as a captain? What did those entail in the training unit?
My responsibility was oversight of the training division. In layman's terms, I was the assistant director of the training division. And again, if we dial back to when I said in the approval process, I was basically the second signature for final approval of lesson plans, topics being picked, training for the agency as a whole. My purview expanded. I was no longer responsible for the Department of Law Enforcement. I was also responsible for the Department of Detention and civilian training. And any piece of paper, we have a form called TG7. It's a training request form. Every piece of paper that any person that wanted training for the agency, I was responsible for approval, denial on it, for all 5,600 employees if they came through that particular office.
You just explained law enforcement, detention deputies, and civilians.
Correct.
What would the civilians entail?
They will take career advancement or proficiency courses.
Say it again.
Career advancement or proficiency courses.
What would their job titles typically be?
Administrative assistant, community service aide, civil processor.
So even the civilians receive training for the Broward Sheriff's Office?
Yes.
Okay. You were captain there for 2 years. During those 2 years, how many lesson plans did you have to approve or review?
Now it's like 50 to 60 a year because it expanded. It's no longer law enforcement, but I also see the correction curriculum or lesson plans. And in addition to that, I see the curriculum for the civilians. In addition to that, now I'm thinking about it, the Guardian program. I was responsible for the Guardian program, oversight of the Guardian program, how that's ran for the Broward Sheriff's Office, and the cadets, the police cadets, and correction cadets at Broward College also.
So at this point in time, when you were training, let's just say as a sergeant, you had to train 1,600 officers, deputies. Now as your role of the captain, can you estimate how many people you were basically in charge of training?
On the sworn side, 1,600 law enforcement, 1,000 Department of Detention, and probably civilians are a little different because we restructured the agency. It may be 100, maybe 800, depending what request for training that particular year.
Understood. Okay. During the time as your captain of the training unit, from 2019 to 2021, were there situations where you, let's just use the word, kicked back training, that it needed to be more structured or it needed something else added to a particular lesson plan?
Yes.
How often would you say that happened?
Honestly, monthly.
Okay.
Because I believe, and excuse my words, the devil's in the details. If you can explain it to me, if it's not quantifiable, and the reason I say quantifiable, training has to be quantifiable and measurable. And what do I mean by that exactly in layman terms? If we teach you a skill, we have to measure it. If I tell you to do a traffic stop, I want it measurable. Like we actually taught this particular curriculum, we observe you do it correctly. So I dug down to the details, and the reason behind that is for liability.
After your tenure as the captain in training until 2021, where was your next unit?
I was promoted to major of the training unit.
When?
March of 2021 to March of 2023.
So for those 2 years as a major of the training unit, what were your responsibilities?
Oversight of the train division, of course, building security, the public safety building at Broward and 27th Avenue, and the reserve deputy unit.
In regards to the training aspect of it, as the major, you're the boss over the training.
Final say so.
You're the final signature on those lines.
Yes.
On the lesson plans.
On the lesson plans.
I'm sorry. Were there situations during those 2 years as the major that you saw lesson plans that you thought needed to be more in-depth or something along
Yes,
those lines?
Yes, I have.
How often would you say that happened as a major?
It was rare now because the captain basically was handling my particular position, my previous position.
Now I'm going to ask you a general question here, ballpark. But during the course of your career, from the time that you were a detention deputy in the academy to the time, one more question. After 2023, what was it, March of 2023? Where did you get promoted to?
My current position right now is Lieutenant Colonel, Patrol Services.
So you're in charge of all of the patrol services?
Yes, sir.
And as a lieutenant colonel, are you still partaking in training?
I do. I teach new sergeant orientation, new lieutenant's orientation. So basic leadership, what's expected of you as a leader, as a supervisor?
So now here's the ballpark question. During your career, from the very beginning to up until, let's say, today, how many hours would you ballpark that you took training, not the teacher, but took training? How many hours?
That's a tough one. Per se, let's say, for instance, of a minimum 40 hours per year times...
Say it again.
40 hours per year times, let's say, 30 years.
Okay. Plus the standalone classes?
Correct.
Okay. Plus the time in Albany, Georgia?
Correct.
Plus the academy for to become a detention deputy?
And cross-serve, yes.
And cross-certification, okay. In terms of classes that you've taught, instead of hours, let's put it this way. During the course of your entire career, how many classes have you taught? Let's start with by topic. How many classes would you estimate you've taught?
Use of force, probably 350 to 400 classes. Active killer, probably. I was there all the time, 60 times, 5 years.
So 300 times yes. Active killer.
Yeah, so 300 is like the going number from sergeant. That's the bulk of my teaching.
Okay.
As a lieutenant, captain, or major, it probably dwindled down to 3 or 4 classes per year.
Okay. In terms of reviewing or approving lesson plans, ballpark it, the entire time that you were in a supervisor role in the training unit, how many lesson plans did you review and or approve?
Conservatively, probably 200, 250, depending on the topic. Because another component of a lesson plan, after 2 years, you need to review it. It might come stale. After 4 years, it's archived.
Okay. Your Honor, may we just broach sidebar very briefly?
Sure.
I'm going to show you what's already been entered into evidence as States 13. And Your Honor, we can show this. Oh, this? The other one. There we go. Thank you, Judge. Lieutenant Colonel, I know you can see this on your screen.
Yes.
Better. Do you recognize this?
That's called a TCR. It's a historical training of a deputy.
Okay, I didn't hear that.
Historical training of a deputy.
And Your Honor, if it's working, can I please put on the annotator as well?
Yes.
Same thing. Now we're getting that. It's fine, Your Honor.
We take that off.
Lieutenant Colonel, I'm going to just point. You recognize this, though?
Yes.
Okay. Does every deputy have something similar that shows all of the training that they've taken?
Yes.
Okay. Zooming. Just looking at the first line. Do you see who this training is for?
Yes.
Who is it for?
Scott Pearson.
Okay. Now, looking at the second page, all the way at the bottom, do you see the date that it starts?
Yes.
Can you read that out, please?
3/29/1999.
Okay. Is there a reason why these documents only show training starting in 99 and not predating that?
It's based upon a system called PeopleSoft, the Broward Sheriff's Office from the PeopleSoft in 1999, prior to whatever record-keeping device they had or platform they had.
So in 99, they started implementing a computerized system to document.
PeopleSoft, correct.
Got it. Okay. Now, I'm going to start on the earlier date. And if I could draw your attention to... Let's see, 109. Do you see that?
Yes.
Okay. And what is that? Was just numbered 109. What was that in?
Tactical pistol.
What does tactical pistol mean?
Tactical pistol is a course where it's developments of fundamentals of handgun shooting, using a handgun. Stance, breathing, grip, trigger control, focusing on a sight or a target, understanding the dynamic of shooting, such as your breathing. Sometimes when you shoot, you get locked in, or I would say over-focus, like tunnel vision. So you control your breathing. It's called tactical breathing. You breathe and you scan to tune out tunnel vision or just getting too fixated on the target.
Is this a class that is typically taken by deputies?
Yes.
Now, is that a mandatory in-service training?
That particular course is a standalone course.
Okay.
Volunteer.
Okay. Now looking at 97. DC-97?
Yes.
And what class is that in?
Tactical pistol.
Is that the same what you were just testified to?
Yes, or it might be updated. Same concept, but the curriculum might be updated with different drills or tactics.
Going back to 109, I apologize. Do you see the date in which this class was taken?
I can't.
Can you? Oh, I'm sorry. Can you see that?
Yes.
What date is that?
12-12-2003.
And then going to 97, there's no way I can put it on one page. Going back to 97, tactical pistol, do you see the date that was taken?
9-15-2006.
Okay. Now looking at 94. Do you see 94?
Yes.
What class is that?
Active shooter.
And when was that taken?
4-4-2007.
This is the active shooter training that you ultimately were responsible for teaching?
Correct.
300 times? Give or take?
60 classes.
60 classes, I apologize. Okay. Now looking at 85, do you see that?
Yes.
Great officer training, what is that?
Great, it's a program for gang, like gang, teaching students for gangs. It's specifically for school resource officers for their particular job responsibilities. It's not something a regular patrol officer would take.
So it's job specific for school resource.
Correct.
Officers. Now looking at 82. Do you see that?
Yes.
Okay. Do you see what it is?
Yes.
What does that say?
Florida Association of School Resource Officers Training Conference.
And that is what date?
7-20-2008.
That particular training, is that conducted by BSO?
No.
Okay, so that's a standalone?
External.
External, another part of the state or another part of the country?
Yes.
Okay. Is that a class typically taken by school resource officers?
Correct.
Is it exclusively for school resource officers?
Yes.
Looking at the next one, 81. What is that?
Firearms qualification.
And what date was that taken?
8-27-2006.
What is that class?
It's not a class, it's a qualification course. It's mandated by the Criminal Justice Standard Training Commission, State of Florida, FDLE. So every law enforcement officer in the state of Florida is mandated to take this course. And it's basically to show that you're proficient using a firearm. It's a 40-round course. You have 3 attempts to get to pass. If you don't pass, we remediate you.
What does that mean, remediate?
We give you additional training to make you get to the level of proficiency to pass this course.
Now that's, of course, every officer has to take.
Must. Every rank.
Okay. Now we're looking at 76, once again. You see it?
Yes.
What does that say?
Firearm qualification.
And which date?
I'm seeing half, 10-12-2009.
Okay, same thing, firearms qualification.
Yes, standard.
Standard. Now looking at the other page, page 102. Do you see 67?
It's blurry, I can't see it.
Oh, it's blurry. Oh, let me see what I can do. Good as we're going to get, I think. You see 67?
Yes.
Okay. Can you read that?
Florida Association of School Resource Officers Training Conference, 7-25-2010 to 7-30-2010.
That's the same class that you were just described. That's not
It's job specific.
Job specific to the school resource officers.
Correct.
65. Scott Peterson, just to streamline this, I'll read it. Tactical pistol taken on 5-9-2010. Is that with the same tactical pistol that you described before?
Yes.
That you earlier took? Looking now at 56, Scott Peterson, the Florida Association of School Resource Officers Training Conference, 7-17-11, same as before, the same conference?
Same conference, yes.
Looking now at 47, Scott Peterson, which one's that?
Active shooter.
What date was this taken?
August 16, 2012.
now looking at the next one, 45. Do you see it?
Yes.
Okay. Scott Peterson, DLE in-service phase one.
Right.
Is that a class that every deputy must take?
It's mandatory in-service, phase one.
Okay. And do you see what data was taken?
4-9-2013.
Okay. Now, I'm showing you what's also part of composite 13 for the state. Do you have to zoom out on this? Can you see that?
Yes.
Okay. Do you see DLE in service phase one?
Correct.
2013 active shooter incident analysis.
Correct.
So is this the lesson plan for that particular class?
Yes.
Okay. Now, looking at... the third page. Is that you?
Yes.
Okay. And what are these numbers after it?
That's the lieutenant signing on my behalf.
Okay. So as you explained before, this process of submitted by, reviewed by an ICJS director, those are the people that have to actually sign off
right.
on this lesson plan.
Correct.
So that means you signed off on this lesson plan.
It means I sent it up and my lieutenant initial, yeah. JM 9407. That's
okay. Now looking at this particular lesson plan. Part two. Well, let me ask you a question. Is this typically what a lesson plan would look like on paper?
Yes.
Okay. How is this? Is this given to the actual trainers themselves to conduct their training based upon this?
Yes. They stick to it. It's a script.
A script. Got it. So every officer receives the same training that took this DLE 1 2013 active shooter training?
Yes. The trainer facilitates the training, and then we follow up with a training completion form report.
Okay. Now, it says directives on this right side. Do you see that?
Yes.
Slide one, slide two, slide three. Is this like a kind of like a PowerPoint presentation?
Correct. Yes.
Slow down, please.
Certainly. In terms of the actual lessons, does it work that there's classroom portion of it and then a real world?
A practical.
Practical. Did that occur in this case?
In this particular course, it's an overview. It's an analysis. It was probably at the range. Because Zach Scott used to work for me. So it was an analysis, an overview of what occurs when an active killer.
Okay. So it's more of a classroom type sense.
Informational.
Got it. Looking at slide four, do you see what it says there?
Participants.
Well, just the whole line right there.
Yes.
What does it say?
Inform participants that all three cases, suspects either kill themselves or surrender when they perceive law enforcement contact was imminent.
Is that something taught, that during an active shooter, you want law enforcement to be present as immediate as possible?
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, active killers are focused on soft targets, which means a school, a church, an airport, a mosque. And the reason why is most attendees are not carrying weapons or law enforcement or trained to defend themselves. That's a perception. When they're focused on these targets, if a law enforcement just enters a room, the presence of a uniform disrupts something called the OODA loop, which is a military term that we use for firefighters, the plane fighters.
Can you spell that for the court reporter?
OODA loop?
Yes.
It's O-O-D-A and loop. It's an abbreviation. OODA loop.
Okay, can you please explain what OODA loop is to the jury?
So the first O is observation. Like, for instance, you guys are observing the monitor. Okay. The second thing you do is called orientation. You're looking at the monitor and you're reading these lines as the SAO is bringing your attention to it. The D is direct, like you're gonna direct something, you're gonna take an action. So your focus now is on the screen, reading line by line. And the last part is A, for action. You're processing the information as he's saying it. He's telling you, he's giving you a number. You're processing, you're looking at it. Yes, I'm looking at the screen. He's going line by line. What am I reading to you? You're processing and you're acting upon it. You're giving a conscious thought to it. Well, in an active killer, they choose a soft target. They can't defend themselves. Kids, a church, a mall, wherever it may be. They're coming there armed to take as many lives in a very short period of time, maybe a minute, 2 minutes max. law enforcement presence disrupts that thought process because their primary objective is to take lives, not engage in a gunfight or confront law enforcement.
Now, looking at the bottom of the screen where it says slide 5, this portion here,
okay.
You see where that line right there, can you please read that?
Explain that being able to prevent such incidents is near impossible, and our true mission lies in minimizing the damage a shooter can do.
Does that go part and parcel with what you were just saying, that speed, that timing matters, that to be is get there as quickly as possible?
Yes. Time's the essence. So the shorter time period, the less casualties, the less victims we have.
And then the line below that?
Identify the formula that more time a shooter has, the more victims he can kill. Our top priority is to stop the killing by any possible means.
Once again, is this in order, the time is of the essence?
Yes.
To respond immediately?
Yes.
This next one, slide, what's categorized as slide 6. Can you please read that?
Although neutralizing the suspects will end the threat, if there are faster alternatives that will get the suspect to stop killing victims, such as forcing him to barricade himself or flee the area, these need to be considered as primary responses.
What does that mean?
To engage an active shooter doesn't necessarily mean to take him out or neutralize the targets. It's to disrupt them, make him force an outcome, flee, barricade, surrender. By you doing that as an officer, basically you're mitigating the loss of life.
Now going down to where I guess it says slide 8 and then video of Carolyn Judger 2013, what does the top line say there?
Explain the potential delay in someone failing to take charge during a critical incident.
And then the next line there?
Explain the importance of the SRD position in schools.
And is that for layout purposes because the school resource officers are familiar with the setting?
Yes.
And down here, location information, is that what that means?
Yes.
Okay. Last page under slide 12. Can you play that, please?
Yeah. Discuss the crucial time delay of waiting for the perfect four-man team and the possibility of considering a team of three, two, or single officer response.
So single officer was a was a possibility even back when this lesson plan was created back in 2013.
That's correct.
Okay. Now going back to this sheet, which I'll have to zoom in on.
Oof.
Looking at 37, Scott Peterson, Florida Association of School Resource Officers Training Conference, 7-2014. That's the same conference that we discussed earlier?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Looking at 36, Scott Peterson, what is that?
Patrol rifle refresher.
And when was that completed?
I can't see.
Oh, sorry.
7-30 of 2014.
What is a patrol rifle refresher?
Patrol rifle refresher is actually what it says, a refresher course. Deputies are issued a basic patrol rifle, the fundamentals of firing a long gun. And annually, as part of our in-service or refresher training, they have to show proficiency in operating this platform, this weapon platform, which is a long gun, a rifle.
Now, in order to take this class, is it that you've been issued a long rifle?
Yes.
So it's safe to say that by 7:30 of 2014, Mr. Peterson was issued a long rifle.
Yes.
Now I'm going to go back to a lesson plan. Zoom out. Do you see this lesson plan there?
Yes.
What is that?
DLE in service 2015 combat lifesaver.
So DLE in service, once again, means everybody must take it.
It's mandatory, yes.
Okay. And what is combat lifesaver? What does that mean?
Combat lifesaver is a fancy term for hasty field medicine. And the concept came from military. How can we mitigate the loss of life by using tactics in the field, such as tourniquets or chest seals? So basically, wounds caused by gunshot wound trauma.
And why is that of importance for in terms of training for a skilled resource officer?
This training is very important based upon the fact of the likelihood of a school resource officer, based upon the training times of active killer occurring in school, is to mitigate the loss of life.
And is this training to stop bleeding as soon as possible?
Yes, stop the bleeding.
Based upon training experience, in order to stop the bleeding, you have to go to the victim.
You have to administer aid to the victim.
Just one last thing on this. Do you see your name there?
Yes.
Reviewed by?
Yes.
So that means you signed off on this.
Right.
DLE in service 2015 combat lifesaver.
Yes.
Now going back to the sheet, which I'll have to zoom in on. Number 30. You see that?
Yes.
Okay. Scott Peterson, handgun class.
Yes, in service.
What does that mean?
It was a four-hour block on the fundamentals of operating your handgun, your pistol, on shooting dynamics.
Do you recall how long that class is?
If I saw the lesson plan, if you keep going, which line is it? I can't see.
I'm sorry. 30.
4 hours.
And that was on what date?
7/14 of 2015.
Now going to 28. Do you see that?
Yes.
Scott Peterson, patrol rifle refresher, 10, 5, and 15. Is that the same patrol rifle refresher course that you just described to the jury?
Yes.
Number 25, do you see that?
Yes.
Scott Peterson, rescue task force in service, 4/19 of 16. What is rescue task force?
Rescue task force is was a new concept at that time. Traditionally, an active shooter or a mass shooting, law enforcement arrive on scene, fire rescue stages. To be forward-thinking, the Broward Sheriff's Office, in partnership with the Fire Rescue Department, implement a practice rescue task force. Basically, fire rescue is going to wear soft body armor or full body armor and be escorted with law enforcement into the warm zone of an active shooter, which a warm zone meaning that the threat has left, but there's casualties there. There's victims there that need to be treated and extricated from the building or the venue.
Now, I want to show you. It's part of States 13. Zoom out. Is this the lesson plan for the rescue task force?
Yes.
Who's the course coordinator?
I am.
Now, I'm looking at page 3. You also reviewed it?
Yes.
What date is that?
8/10/16.
Okay. Now looking at page 4. You see where it says contact team?
Yes.
Can you please read that?
It's first on scene. 1 to 4 deputies, they will be actively engaged securing or searching for the suspect. Hot zone.
So back when this class was given 2016, it was also thought of that one deputy may actively engage or search for the shooter.
Correct.
And rescue task force, in terms of the extraction team, what's the difference between the contact team and the extraction team?
The contact team is the first 1 to 4 deputies or officer on scene. Your job is basically to search and find the killer, disrupt their mindset, mitigate the loss of life. The extraction team is the second wave of law enforcement prior to fire rescue entering the facility, the building, the venue, to start implementing combat lifesaver, field medicine, fast, hasty field medicine to mitigate the loss of life and injury.
And does that kind of combine with the combat lifesaver training that we just mentioned?
Yes.
Okay. Now looking at the next page, hot zone, warm zone, cold zone. Can you please just describe that? I know you briefly started to get into it, but if you could just explain that to the jury.
The hot zone is active. There's shots being fired. You're seeing the killer actually doing the worst, the carnage. The warm zone is a lull after. The suspect has left the area, but is still casual there. There's still a threat, possible of a threat, a second person, possible. And the cold zone is where there's no threat at all.
So when you say possible warm zone, what exactly? But can you just expand on that?
Possibility is, in law enforcement, we have the concept of plus one. There may be one shooter, maybe two shooters. Therefore, in the warm zone, initially the extraction team will present itself, security area, and then the rescue task force will enter.
Does the plus one, the fact that there might be another...
assailant, yes.
Or another, and plus one also applies if they have one gun, they may have a second gun.
Correct.
Does the plus one in regard to an active shooter mean that the first deputy on scene doesn't need to go in?
No, it doesn't mean that.
What does the plus one mean then?
It's a potential shooter, another shooter, and if you hear gunshots, you got to go towards it. It means people are being executed.
Now, that same day, looking at this, I'll have to zoom in again, I apologize. So the Rescue Task Force that you just explained was conducted on
419 to,
and it took 4 hours. You see directly above that?
Active shooter.
Which is number 24?
Yes.
Active shooter completed 4 hours on, is that the same day as the RTF?
Yes.
Okay. Zoom out here. Now, what exactly are we looking at?
It's called a TCR, a training completion report. It's a report of the attendees, who was there as instructors, what course was taught, how many hours it was, and it has an association to a lesson being taught that particular day.
Now, do you see right here where it says course coordinator?
Yes.
Who's that?
That's myself.
Okay. Location, stockade. What's the stockade?
The stockade is an older jail on Commercial and Power Line, 5400 Northwest 9th Ave, City of Fort Lauderdale, that is no longer being used to house inmates that we have temporarily converted into a training venue.
Is this indoors?
Yes.
Okay. And what... The stockade, what is this used to compare to? What kind of building is in the real world?
Well, the way the stockade is structured, it's called ENF building. It's open bay. So basically, it's the equivalent of a school cafeteria, but for inmates. There's metal tables, there's bunks. So we simulate when we do drills on one particular drill that it's a cafeteria and there's an active shooter occurring and an officer, maybe one or four, responding to that stimuli and addressing the situation.
Do you actually remember this?
Yes.
Class?
Yes.
You just were explaining cafeteria situation. And we'll get into the scenario that we'll talk about in a minute. But you can visualize, you remember this.
Yes.
And just, that's your name down there?
Yes.
Now, looking at... This is the lesson. Oh, I'm sorry, I gotta zoom out a little bit. This is the lesson plan associated with it?
Yes.
Signed off by you?
Yes.
Now, looking at the lesson plan, you see where it says this?
Yes.
What are the priorities of life?
Correct.
What are the priorities of life?
The first priority is the hostages or victims. The second is innocent bystanders, the police. The third is police or slash deputies, and the last is suspects.
What does that mean, though, priority?
Priority of life. Our first objective is to mitigate the loss of lives for the hostages or innocents. That's our first priority. Second is bystanders, and then third would be us, and last is the suspect. So in the terms of rendering aid, if the suspect is bleeding out and I had a victim there, the victim gets first medical aid. That's the priority.
And that's the priority of all.
Yes.
Looking down a little bit further on this, where it says, where do active shooters take place? What is the first one?
Schools.
And why was that added to this lesson?
Traditionally, one of the most known active killer shooting was in Columbine. And that changed the whole way law enforcement approached active shooter training. It was kids. Unfortunately, law enforcement waited for other deputies or officers to show up, and a lot of lives were lost. So it changed the whole concept of how we respond in law enforcement to any active shooter.
And Columbine happened on April 20th
of 1989? You got a date. I'm not sure. I'm going to send a date, sir.
Okay. Did it happen in 99? Do
you yes.
Okay. And you're saying that what happened in Columbine changed the way law enforcement will respond to active shooters?
Correct.
In what way specifically?
You no longer wait for a team. You cannot. Every gunshot is a victim. And as you're hearing it, that's live intelligence. You have to do something. Make a decision. And your decision, just mere presence, is going to disrupt, like I said, the OODA loop. That person, that shooter is so fixated on the soft targets. Your job as law enforcement, the mere presence, is to disrupt their mindset and change their game plan.
Does that mean to go towards the sound of gunshots?
Yes.
Does that mean you must know precisely where the gunshot is coming from?
No, it does not. You search. You go into hunting mode. Every shot you hear is intel. And as gunshots are being fired, there's certain things that happen. The smell. You'll see casings. You may see trails of blood. You may see people fleeing the area from a particular direction. Those are all things we play into our senses to respond to that stimuli, which we try to replicate when we did training in the stockade.
And how did you try to replicate that in the stockade?
We set a scenario of active shooter in a classroom or a cafeteria, shooting people, making threats. We shoot blanks, simulate blanks. The deputy participant shows up. They gather what's going on. They see the scenario unfolding, and they have to respond.
So you're actually shooting off rounds, blanks, but rounds inside of a building?
Yes.
Do you also have actors or other employees running out?
Right. So you have the victims, you have the active shooter, and you have bystanders, like other deputies running out, screaming for sentry overload to give you, like, basically simulate if that happened in real life, what's going to occur. People's going to be fleeing from the scene. People are going to be victims. The shooter may or may not be continuing shooting. But how to address that situation as it unfolds from you. And they're going to point, like you say, where they're going. They're probably going to point in the general direction. They might give verbal. They might give you an eye look. They might have wounds. There might be trails of blood. There might be casing, smoke. But basically, it's all the breadcrumbs leading to that scene. Like, what can I do? Where is this intel coming from? And you just process it.
Now, you use the phrase sensory overload. Is the purpose of training to try to counteract that as much as possible?
Yes.
And in what way?
You try to replicate it. So when that day comes, you respond. It's, for instance, static drills where you stand and shoot a target. It's of no use to us in law enforcement. Law enforcement has evolved into using scenario-based training, such as active shooters or in traffic stop interaction. This may happen. So it basically gets you, like, if this occurs, I know how to respond. The more repetition you have, the better you respond when faced with that stimuli.
Are TI simulators or FAT simulators also utilized in training?
Yes.
Can you explain to the jury what those are?
FATs are basically interactive projection, and an officer may see someone pull a gun or respond a certain way, and you have a firearm, taser, mostly a firearm, to respond to that stimuli. So you draw your firearm, if it's a shoot or don't shoot, for judgmental shooting, and you engage a threat or you don't engage a threat. It could be used for de-escalation, or it could be used for addressing a threat. But that's one form. The best form is scenario-based because there's live interaction. And when we do live interaction, there's actually scripts. We brief the role player. This is what you can do exactly.
Just going back to the FATs, just to explain to the jury, can you just explain the layout of the room that this is done in?
It might be a classroom, a projection screen. there's like two X's on the ground where you stand, the camera tracks you. There's a deputy or trainer behind you playing the scenario out that's been pre-recorded, and then you respond to it, whatever scenario you get. And it could be manipulated based upon the software.
So you have your gun belt on. Can you just please stand up and show the gun belt?
Yes.
So you have a gun belt on, but you have likened to a firearm, but it's
right.
It's like a almost like a laser gun.
It's a laser gun. It's a gun, shapes a gun, you pull the trigger, a light emits, and it registers the shot on the screen, basically.
So it's a manner, it's a simulator.
Correct.
Okay. But scenario based is real people.
Real
it's not
people.
It's not a simulator, it's not a screen with actors and
correct. Okay. It's interaction.
Got it.
Mr. Kilroy, I'm just gonna press pause real quick.
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to give you a quick restroom break. Same admonition as always. Please do not discuss the facts of the case, the evidence, the witnesses, or the testimony until we return to the trial. I'll tell you when that is. If you leave the notepads in your chairs and step in the back for me for one moment, I will be right back with you. Thank you. Okay, we're outside the presence of the jury. Everyone can be seated. Real quick, 5-minute restroom break. Sir, if you'd like to step down, you may do so. If you want to stay here, you can stay here. But I can't have you talk to anyone about your
testimony. I'm going to stretch, Your Honor. I'm going to stretch right here for 5 seconds.
Okay, you're fine. Okay, 5-minute recess.
That's segment number one. There is more to come. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait. You mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.